Hello, 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 and welcome to episode 5.
Welcome.
The Gamecasters. I'm one of your hosts, Ryan James.
And one of your other hosts, Jeremy Pete.
We say one of, like there's 100 of us. There's only two. It's just me and Jeremy. Sometimes Jeremy and me. We'll just say our names 100 times. Okay, so we are broadcasting from a completely different locale today. I came over to Jeremy's house. Normally we do this in my game room, and I traveled far and wide to travel all the way to Jeremy's place.
It was a long journey.
It took forever to get here. Not at all. We live really close to each other. But anyway, so we are doing a podcast today. We're going to talk about what we played. We played a couple of games, and we're going to do things a little different today. We're going to talk about two-player only games.
Yep.
And then we also have a new kind of idea that we're going to implement once in a while, kind of keep it fresh, keep you all on your toes, mix it up.
Yeah.
And we're going to do some listing. So if that sounds interesting to you, then please don't hit the stop button. Keep going, and let's talk about what we played today. So we started with a game of Summoner Wars.
Yes.
Summoner, I don't know if we, there was, are these factions that were in the original set?
Well, you played the Phoenix Elves today.
I played the hell out of the Phoenix Elves.
That's the original, one of the original sets.
Okay.
And then I played the Cave Goblins, which was the second summoner of the Cave Goblins.
Oh, you played with one of the second summoners. Those are new, right?
Yeah, that was Frick.
Oh, Frick and Frack.
Yep. Well.
Is it not Frickin' Frack? That sounds like that's what it should be called. That's what it should be called. The third summoner will be called Frack Colby, okay, if you're listening to this. Okay, let's back up for a second. I don't know if many people, I'm sure, well, I have no idea, if they know about Summoner Wars. So how does, tell us about
it. It's been around for a number of years. Yeah, it's kind of Plat Hat's foundational game, you know. It's kind of what got them started, what they're famous for.
Right.
Fantastic game, one of my favorites for sure. But it's a card game that uses a board. It's kind of a grid system, you know, like you're moving the cards on the grid of the board to control space. And you're playing the role of a summoner who has special powers. And
that is so cool and nerdy.
Yeah.
I love that kind of thing. Wizards, I was just telling Jeremy earlier, anything with like magic and wizards and nerdy, cool summoner stuff like that is just right up my alley.
It's really cool. Yeah, and it's all about wizards.
So the whole point of the game is it's kind of a chess style. Like, we're in chess, you know, you're capturing the king. In Summoner Wars, you're trying to kill the other opposing player's summoner.
Yep.
Right? And you just bring out units every round. So you can summon other units. You move your units along that grid that Jeremy was talking about. And then you attack. And then you build your magic for the next round, and you just kind of do that over and over and hope that, you know, you can kill my summoner before I kill yours.
Yeah. And it's all about using the cards, too. So the cards are used as the units on the board, as well as using them to build magic.
Multi-use cards are so cool.
Yeah.
I like that mechanic a lot. Yeah. You can do a lot with little cards, you know. Yeah. It's funny because this game is pretty... It's pretty thematic in the way it does that. And that seems like a thematic element, but, you know, Stefan Feld uses that in some of his games. If you've played Bruges, that has multi-use cards, and that's a, you know, as Euro as it gets, and that's really cool. I just really like that mechanic. Jeremy had a slight advantage over me. I mean, we almost have played this game the same amount of times. This was my first play. Jeremy's only played it, I think, 113?
It might be times. 112 or 113.
So, I mean, you know, it was really close.
Yeah.
But the game, I think, is super cool. I mean, you know, you have your deck, and the cool thing about it, which is also kind of what makes it tense, is once your deck runs out, that's it.
Yeah.
There's no reshuffling. I mean, maybe some factions do that. I'm not sure if you can put things back into your deck with other factions.
There are some that do that.
But for the most part, you have your deck of cards, and you either discard them... Or they go into your magic pool, right? You don't ever put them back in a deck to draw again.
You can put things back into your hand from the discard pile with
some factions. But yeah, okay. So generally speaking, once your deck's gone, you're done. So that was the situation that I was faced with today. I was kind of beating Jeremy into a bloody pulp for the first, I don't know, half of the game. You know, I was just cornering his, I kind of had his summoner cornered. I was preventing him from summoning himself because I had his walls blocked. You have to summon next to walls. That's why. So I had those blocked, and I was feeling so sweet. And then I looked down at my deck, and I realized I only had a couple cards left in there.
Oh, yeah.
And so I basically had to deal with the units I had on the board. Jeremy had a ton of cards left in his deck, so he was able to, you know, kind of whittle my units away. And then once they were dead, I couldn't – what could I do? I couldn't do it. I couldn't bring anybody else out because they were all already gone, you know, because I had used – I'd sacrificed a lot of the units from my deck to build my magic pool up to get more out early. And I think it might have worked had I been able to kind of take advantage of one thing early in the game. That strategy might have worked, but the long game is not good for that strategy, you know?
Not for that faction.
For that faction.
That's, like I said, it's one that you just burn through fast.
But it's a cool game. I mean, the art is beautiful. The board is...
Yeah.
In this game... this is the Alliances Master Set. There's another regular Master Set that has a bunch of factions. This one that Jeremy has is the Alliances Master Set, and it comes with these like neoprene mouse pad mats that you use for the board, and it's super cool. I mean, that's just awesome.
Yeah, they did a great job on it, and it gives you enough storage space in there to put all the factions in it, which is why I just kept that box and got rid of, recycled all the other ones.
It's nice. He pimped it out a little bit with some sweet Chessex dice.
Yeah.
We had, you know, we were using a cool homemade dice tower that he got from a friend of his. And it was just, we were just bathing in the nerd. It was just really, really, it was awesome. It was a really fun game. It doesn't, it's the kind of game that you're not just sitting there for 2 hours. You know, I mean, you can play it. Jeremy was even saying you can play it AP and just kind of, but it's more fun.
Yeah.
And it was more fun for both of us. And it took us a little while, but it was still more fun to just be like, all right, I'm doing this, and then just boom, boom, boom,
just make moves. Just commit and do it, and get to another game, you know?
Yeah, because it's not the type of game that you need to spend all your mental bandwidth on.
No.
You know, I mean, it's just very tactical. It's very tactical. And it can induce that AP, because it's kind of got a chess-like feel in that way, where you want to kind of try to think a couple moves ahead. The problem is you can't really do that because you never know what your opponent's got in his hand. And that's what happened to me. I was kind of attacking him, and I was like, oh, he's done. I got him. And he was like, I don't know what I could do. Oh, I can do this, which lets me do this, this, this. Boom, and you're done. And so then my whole plan was out the window, and I was forced to, you know. Whoosh. So it just made it better to just kind of act quickly and get through it, you know.
Yeah, and you could play a game in a half hour, 45 minutes if you're fast about it. I think the time that they give on the box is 30 minutes, or at least BGG says that. But not a lot of games that I played have been 30 minutes.
Of it, yeah.
Yeah, it's usually
between. Well, you have a very small sample size, 113.
Believe it or not, that's not very many plays compared to some
people. Oh, I know. Yeah, I know. People that have no time, you know, like we have families and jobs and, you know, other things that, other hobbies and other things that we do, you know, responsibilities that we don't have to do. Some people, that's why I always think to myself, you know, most of us, I think that all my friends, you know, that I have found this hobby in our adult lives.
Yeah.
If you and me had these board games when we were in high school.
Oh, geez.
The games that are out now, how much time we could dedicate to the hobby. It's really sad. I don't like thinking about it because it just makes me upset. But
well, you were doing other things, right? Video games.
I was playing video games like crazy. And it's just...
One form or another, right?
Yeah. But it's like video games, I could do that more now because you play most video games you play by yourself.
That's true.
So I could wait till the kids go to bed and play video. I can still do that now. But... board games, when all I did was hang out with my friends, you know, we could have just played 100,000 board games. You know, we played poker, Texas Hold'em poker, for like 4 years in a row. That's all we did was play that. If we had board games back then, oh my God, the stuff we could have done. But anyway, hindsight, all that. I'm not going to slip my wrists on
Well, I was doing role playing. It's similar to Summoner Wars.
You're right.
I think that's kind of why I like the Summoner Wars, is because it has the same theme.
Yeah.
Yeah, that fantasy.
It is awesome.
Goblins and elves and all that stuff.
Wizards. Say wizards.
Oh, Wizards.
Yes.
Wizards too.
You like Wizards too? Oh, that's cool. It's a very cool game. I really enjoy it. I think it kind of can appeal to a lot of different types of gamers. I mean, it's gonna appeal more to thematic gamers, I think.
I think so.
But there's definitely a lot of strategy and there's a lot of thinky elements in there that you can wrap your brain around. It's not literally just run and roll dice.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can mitigate dice rolls in some ways. Certainly that can have a big impact. Yeah.
Like attacking a summoner 6 times and not hitting a single
time. I'm not going to listen to this at all because you still beat the crap out of me. So, so that was Summoner Wars. Very cool game by Plaid Hat. Games again. I think that was their flagship game. You know,
sure.
They're for a while until now they're huge. But and then after Summoner Wars,
I was
like, let's start this podcast. And Jeremy's like, well, I got other plans for you. So Jeremy, we've talked about before, is a prolific game designer.
I wouldn't say that.
Well, neither would I.
I try.
Let's go backward. No, but he's designed. A bunch of different games, actually, and they're all super cool. And a lot of them are very abstract, which is funny to me because you don't play too many abstract with me other than your own stuff.
Maybe it's just easier.
Yeah. Me. Jeremy's the laziest guy I know, so he just stops it. He's like, whatever.
Just numbers. You know, I'm good at numbers.
No, but that is kind of interesting.
It is.
You know?
Yeah. I don't really stop to think about it that much, but...
So one of his abstract games that he's been... I would say pushing more than most. This is probably your furthest along design. You know, this are Five Kingdoms. Jeremy's house is coming down.
That's ice falling off the roof. This one has been in the works for 3 years now.
So this one that we're talking about is called Stop the Germs.
Yep.
He won small design contest, right?
Best small design for the two-player print and play contest. I think that was 2013.
Very cool. It's a very,
very
cool thing. So you've been going through a lot of back and forth with publishers, right? Yeah.
It's been in the hands of 5 different publishers.
Wow.
So I've gone through the gamut with it.
But I think I'm not saying that's typical, but I think, you know, a lot of people that think they're going to design a game and go through a publisher are just like, I'm going to design this awesome game. The publisher is going to pick it up and it's going to come out in a year and then everyone's going to have it. And it doesn't work that way, right?
You have to be patient.
if you're patient. So I think that's,
yeah, you just have to stick with it. That's the biggest thing. And, so here we are with it. It's gone through a lot of transformation. We, play tested a couple different things today, a new setup that I was doing with it, and it seems like it worked out pretty well.
Very cool new way it works. So here's the game. You have a bunch of hex germ tiles. They have like a Jeremy did all the artwork in the game, and it's cool. And you can check it out on BGG if you know just go Stop the Germs. You'll see all of that stuff there. It's really cool. So you got a bunch of hex tiles in front of you, and they all have a one germ on their back side. The other side of them have various numbers from 3 to 4 to 5 to 6, I think.
Yeah.
And then there's 2 tiles that have like a copy ability on them. So before I explain the really cool part of the game, I'll explain how the game works. So on your turn, you get 3 actions. You can take your tiles, and they all have to be face down, which is the one germ side, and you place them to the table on already attached to the board. So the game starts with 2... you know, germ tiles out there. It's like Hive in that way, where there's no actual board. You just make the board as you're going along with the germ tiles, right? And so on your turn, you can add one of your germ tiles to the existing, you know, board that you've created, or you can flip a germ tile that's already been out there, or you can move a germ tile if it's not blocked to anywhere else on the place, right? So that's the normal game. At the end of the game, you count up the number of germs showing on your tiles in the middle of the board, because you know you're going to be flipping them over, and whoever has the most wins. And you might hear that and say, okay, that sounds ho-hum, which it's not. It's actually really fun just like that. But the cool part of the game is, and this is the thing he kind of just changes, now he's going to have, there's 10 special power
nine ones. Nine for now. There might be a tenth.
Oh, there might be a tenth. Okay, yeah. Nine for now. Special power ones. It's really cool. Yeah. So take it from here. I feel like I'm just taking over. This is your game, and I'm telling everybody about it.
You're doing a great job. That's what makes the game really the special powers. So what they do is they have special effects that either bend the rules or have their own rules that affect scoring or attacking your opponent, stopping the germs, right? So there's things like vaccines and antibiotic nukes and pills and all kinds of stuff in there that it just makes it fun.
Yeah, they break the rules. They mess with your opponent. But you know what's so funny? I don't usually like take that. I really don't. It usually kind of irks me. In this game, it doesn't matter. It doesn't bother me one bit. Yeah. But the cool thing is there's nine, maybe 10 tiles at the beginning of the game. The way it is right now, at the beginning of the game, you shuffle all of them up face down and then randomly deal out three to each player. And so this is a two-player game. So that's really cool because you now have three special powers and your opponent does, but you have no idea what he's got.
Yep.
And as one of your actions, you can play one of those tiles. You can, but you only get three, so you can only play them one time. They don't come back to you. You play them, and then that's it.
That's it. Some of them will stay in play on the board. Others will be just played and then discarded. So there's a combination of different ones there and how they're actually played on the board.
What I'm most impressed with those tiles is the plays we've had, they seem pretty balanced.
Yeah.
I think so. They seem... There was one that I was thinking might be overpowered, but I don't really think it. I'm not really sure it is anymore. But there wasn't ones that you had that I was like, well, of course, now he's going to win because he has that tile. And I didn't feel like I was screwed with the ones I had. Yeah. And they all kind of synergize together. And even no matter what you have, I feel like. And it's just really, really adds a level of tenseness to the game.
Because
you just don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. And it's a little chaotic for an abstract game. Most abstract games are open information, you just boom, boom, boom. This is has a little chaotic element to it, and it really makes it exciting in a way that a lot of abstracts aren't exciting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
having that, it's kind of...
I mean, I'll go back to Hive. Hive is a similar mechanically game where you're playing...
Hexes.
To this, thing. But you can see everything I have. I can see everything you have. I know how everything moves. I can plan out your moves kind of thing. With this game, all your tiles are face down. I don't know what you're putting out. I don't know if that's a three germ or if that's a six germ or if that's the germ that copies. So I don't really know what to stop right away until you start flipping stuff over. And then the game kind of unfolds. Right. Is it too late? Do I have the right special tiles left to deal with what you just did? So there's a mystery, and that just makes it tense. Some people might not like that part about it in their abstract games. That might be too much. Like, I can't determine what's going on. I can't deal with this. But
it plays so quickly that
so
it really
quickly.
Doesn't have that investment of time that you feel like
you don't.
Man,
feel
I spent
screwed.
An hour figuring out a strategy and now I'm screwed. But it's not that way. It's
right.
It's so fast. You're like, oh, let's play another one.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. So that was a game day.
Yep.
The game day so far. Those are the two games we played. Now, if you notice, both of those games were two-player only games.
Yep.
So Jeremy and I, we do a lot of two-player gaming. Not all games that we play are only for two players, but a lot of the thing we do is two-player games. So we decided to kind of focus on games that were strictly for two players, only two players.
Yep.
What do you enjoy about two-player only games?
Oh, geez. I think they're one of my favorite types of games to play.
Yeah, how come?
I think because it's more intimate. Like, I get to know that one opponent and play multiple plays. And, it just seems more – I feel more connected to the game.
Yeah.
More connected to your strategy in particular.
Do you like that you don't have to concentrate on many people's things? Because if there's a four-player game, sometimes between turns, what one person's doing affects the other person, which affects you, which affects the third player, and then you can't plan as easily.
Can't plan as well, yeah.
Do you like that you only have to focus on the player across from you, and only what you do is going to affect what I do? I don't have to wait and decide and a bunch of other people.
Well, in a way, it's more streamlined, but I mean, I do like the multiplayer games too. There's something really great about that as well. But it just seems like a two-player game is more streamlined and faster. There's less downtime, and what they do is directly affecting you.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just.
Is it easier to design a two-player only game?
Yeah, for sure.
I think so too.
Because, well, you have to play test a game, right? So two-player game is so much easier to find playtesters for than four or six-player. Like, how do you get that many people together to do that?
Yeah, it's hard unless you're paying them.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, to play over and over and over again, it's hard to find playtesters for sure. I have a weird love-hate relationship with two-player only games. I find that they're not... I don't know. I don't always like them as much as multiplayer games. That's not true in all cases because pretty much my favorite game of all time happens to be a two-player only game. Uh-huh. But for the most part, I find that...
You like that group interaction?
Yeah. I don't know. I really do. There is something to just me and you, but I kind of like the outside element of more people interacting with the game state, seeing how that kind of works, you know, and it just seems, sometimes it seems like it creates more interesting things. That's not true in all cases, of course, because my favorite game, Claustrophobia, is not, I wouldn't, that does not need more people.
Yeah, it's actually perfect with two.
But as I was compiling a bunch of games that were two-player only, I was just kind of like, this one's all right. You know? It was kind of like that for me. So I'm not sure what it is exactly about them that... it doesn't rub me the wrong way at all, but I just don't seem to, you know...
Doesn't really get you.
Yeah, I mean...
I found it hard to, when trying to compile the games, like, to find the games that are strictly two-player player that I've only. Actually played.
Yeah.
Like, there's so few that I've actually played, really.
I wonder why. For me, when I was earlier in the hobby, I never played only two players ever. So when I saw a game that was only for that could only play two, I immediately dismissed it. Twilight Struggle. When I first got into the hobby, I was like, "Oh, cool! This is the number one game on BoardGameGeek. I want to see what this is all about." And then I was like, "Oh, it only plays two. Next," because that never happened. My game group was always at least four. You know.
Well, yeah, that's a huge thing.
So I bought a few. That I was like, oh, I like these games. These are going to be good games. And I researched them. And then a friend of mine, Jeff, bought a bunch. And then we'd get together and we'd play one, you know. So it's like we had a bunch and we were never playing them all. So I was kind of like, well.
It's almost better to have games that play two to four, two to six.
Yeah, games that play well with two but can play more are usually better for me. Unless they're, but I guess the most of the games that are two-player only that I really enjoy are lighter.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't played Twilight Struggle yet. I haven't played War of the Ring. And those are heavier, you know, but the majority of the ones that I like and enjoy are really super light.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, Summoner Wars is pretty light. It's not super light, but
it's light. It's on the lighter side, but it's not by any means a heavy game.
No. So, I wonder if that's that's interesting.
Something to think about.
But I do really like them. I don't know. I do like them. I don't know. I was compiling my list. I came up with about 15 games, and there's like 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 of these that I'm like, yeah. The rest are like, oh, these are cool. They're nice.
Yeah.
You know. So we decided that we were going to run out of topics pretty quickly if we just kept it at what did you play and then topic show. Also, we found that we were not going to play our games as often because we want to play a new game for the podcast.
Yeah.
You know, every podcast. So we said, okay, well, we don't have to do what we just played every time necessarily. So then we said, okay, well, what are we going to do instead? Yeah. We're pretty boring people. We don't really have anything to talk about. So... I came up with, and I said, why don't we do some listing? We could do some, like, top fives, maybe top tens, you know, maybe top thousands.
You know, jeez.
I don't know if I know anything that I have a thousand favorite, top thousand of. And I thought this could be a cool idea. There's a lot of things, and I love to list. Yeah. I mean, I think that, I don't know if that's a gamer thing, But
happens a lot in
listing is very cool, you know, quantifying what's my favorite versus what's my slightly less favorite, you know. That's kind of cool. So keeping on theme for this podcast, we decided to do our top 5 two-player only games.
Yeah.
So I think we should start with our number 5. I wonder if I can guess yours. I'm going to try to guess your number 5.
Try to guess it.
All right. Your number 5 game. Have I played it with you?
Nope.
I have no idea. Oh, yes, I do know. Is it X-Wing?
Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah. All right, go ahead. Tell us about X-Wing.
It was a hard one to put on number 5 because I'm kind of like, maybe it's number 6 or 7. I don't know.
What was on your short list? Like, what was it? What was it just edging out? Do you know?
The Duke.
Really? All right, you know what? I don't want you to say any more because I was going to put the Duke. All right, just talk about X-Wing.
All right, well, I know we haven't played this together, but I know you have the attack wing,
yeah,
which is similar. But I got into Star Wars X-Wing, I don't know, a year and a half ago or something.
Yep.
Played with my friend Todd, BMW rider on BGG. Check him out. And he got me into it. We kind of got each other into it. But it's a, you know, it's a two-player game. It says two-player on the box, but you can do a variation with 4. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a two-player only in my mind.
Yeah, I would say so.
So it's I rated this at an 8 on BGG. So
oh my gosh,
it's an 8.
That's the highest you've rated anything.
Well, we have to work down the list.
You're right. That's true. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Holy crap. That's the worst. Surprised. I'm gonna go crazy.
So on the box it says 30 to 45 minutes. From my experience, it's been more 60.
Yeah, and plus it can take longer if you're, you know, 90. Picking your armies, right? If you have all the ships. I mean, are you talking just base out of the box? Because you only get 3 ships that way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I kind of wrote my pros and cons of the games here. And
you did more research than I did.
The con, before getting into how the game actually plays, is that it is a collectible type game. So you have to spend money to make this thing work.
Yep.
It's not as much as like Magic would be, where you're, you know, what you spend, you're going to win with, but it has a lot to do with it.
Yeah. Fantasy Flight knew what they were doing by I mean, I'm sure everybody knows about X-Wing now, but they're beautiful because they're pre-painted.
It's fantastic.
They just look gorgeous, you know, and they're on those stands and they're just like, you know, wah. And they're just very, very cool things. Yeah, so how does it play?
Well, it's a miniatures game. I don't know if anybody out there has played Wings of War or Wings of Glory.
That's the system X-Wing's based on?
Based on, yeah. It's kind of the next generation of that, which those games were started as card games.
Is that like World War II planes?
World War One.
World War One.
It started with World War One. Now it's World War II as well. But you were using cards and kind of moving the planes, which were cards, around the board and shooting each other.
Yeah.
Reducing, you know, armor, you know, doing damage to
each other.
Just trying
to take down each other's planes, basically.
And that's pretty much what Star Wars is.
That kind of thing. Yep.
Yeah, it's like you have a fleet that you put together, or if you use something out of the book, you know, that will give you the setup. And then you basically, one person's rebels, one person's...
Empire,
and then there's another one, a third one.
Oh,
out there, I can't remember the name.
Really, but bounty hunters?
Yeah, it's kind of the bounty, the scum factions.
Cool.
That's what they're called.
Okay.
So you play against each other, two player. You got your fleets that you're shooting, you know, flying the ships around,
just moving your ships around the table, and
rolling dice.
It's super fun.
Yeah, it's good.
That's a good pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great pick.
I would say the pros would be that the minis are super, super cool, and they're even cooler when people, like, pimp them out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you go on BGG and check out the paint jobs for some of these things, they're just awesome.
To me, at first, I was like, people are painting these? I think they're great. But people that know painting are like, no, these are so standard and, you know, at best.
Start, I guess.
But, yeah, people – and the board. So you can just play on a table, but some people have made personal –
yeah.
You know, boards that they play on. It looks like the Death Star. It's just super cool to watch them go. But the game is so... I like it because the entry into the game is very, very small. I mean, in terms of learning it. It is simple.
There's a little detail to it, but really it's...
Because it's basically, you have these like cardboard arcs, you know, some are straight lines. I mean, basically you have a card, you just like, you know, you figure out how you're going to move. You put the little cardboard thing in front of your ship, you move your ship, and then it's your turn, you know, and then we just go around the board and roll dice. It's simple in its approach, you know. I mean, like Jeremy said, of course, there's like little rules here you got to, you know, hit there and stuff like that. But it's basically you just fly your ships around the board and kill the other person. That's the goal.
Yep.
That's really all there is to it, and it's very, very, very fun. And it can get bogged down because, you know, you have that I must own more mentality. Yeah. You want all of it. I need a Y-Wing and an A-Wing and an Imperial A-wings. TIE fighter. Yeah, whatever, all these things. Yeah, you need multiples of them. Because you just want as much variety as possible. Out the main box, Fantasy Flight was like dangling a carrot in front of your face. Yeah,
you get the main box or the base game, you get one X-Wing.
Two TIE Fighters and an X-Wing.
Which is enough to play like one fun game, and then you're like, oh.
Yeah, it gets boring super fast, and you want to go buy more. You know, people always say, a lot of people are like, buy at least two
That's what
base
I did.
Games. At
two
least,
base games.
Yeah, at least two. So then you have four TIE Fighters and two X-Wings and, you know, buy a couple things here and there. But, I mean, if you want to get really, really into it, you can. But if you want to play it casually and just buy a couple things, you can do that too. I mean, that's how I always played. It was just casual.
And I think what some people do is one person will say, hey, I'm going to buy all the Rebel stuff. And then the other person will buy all the Imperial stuff. So you kind of come to the table with those things and, you know, you only have to buy half.
Yeah.
So, good game. Check
That's
it
very
out.
Cool. I like that game. That's Star Wars X-Wing Miniatures game by Fantasy Flight.
Yep.
Right?
I think Fantasy Flight might have been bought.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Asmodee owns them now. Yeah. Right?
So, I don't know.
They
how
own
that's
Days of Wonder,
things,
too.
But...
Asmo Flight of Wonder. Yeah, they own. And I think they just bought Catan.
Oh, gee. Yeah, they did.
Right?
Yeah.
Just Catan, I think they bought. So, yeah, they're a juggernaut.
Over. So, right. What's your number five?
Number five. It's funny. I just said that. I don't know if I said it, but I don't. Abstracts aren't really my bag. You know, I do like. So there's a couple abstracts I like, and I like them a lot. And I don't know if you've ever heard of the GIPF series.
No.
Of games. It's very strange if you've never heard it before, and they all have very weird titles. I can't remember exactly how many there are. There's like six or seven of them, I think. I could be. I'm sure I'm off on that, but yeah, it's called the GIPF series. GIPF. They're just a bunch of different abstract games with gorgeous components. You may have heard of a couple of these. Zerts.
Nope.
GIPF is another. I think is actually one of them. Tzar, I think is TZAAR, and then my favorite, Yinch. Have you heard
Yinch.
Of Yinch? You
nope.
didn't. He's giving me this face like, what on God? What are you talking about, sir?
Is it like wood, like the wood pieces?
No, they're like, I don't know if it's, I don't think it's Bakelite. It's some really interesting plastic, but they're beautiful. I mean, we'll have to play it at some point. I think you'll really enjoy
for sure.
it. So what's great about Yinch, and I think that's, Yinch is pretty much, a lot of people agree that's the best of the GIPF series. You know, it's very good. It's rated like 115 on BoardGameGeek. It's pretty high up there.
Yeah.
Basically, you just have a bunch of rings, like plastic rings, and the board is like a bunch of crisscross lines. And you have like, I think it's five rings you have. I can't remember. I haven't played in a long time. It's actually not mine. It's my buddy Jeff's. And you have like five rings, and you have a bunch of little discs, and they're white on one side, black on the other side. The goal of the game, basically, is to take three of your rings and score them. And the way that happens is when you move a ring over a piece, it flips to either the yellow or the black side. And you want to make a straight line of five of your color. So if I'm black, I want to make a straight line of five black. Once I do that, I remove one of my rings from the board. Once I remove three, I win.
Hmm. Cool.
It is so much fun. I didn't feel like I was playing an abstract game, you know, when I'm playing that. It just seems like, I go here, you go here, I go here. And it's quick, and it's, you see combos you can make, like, oh, if I do that, that'll flip this over, and that'll put that there, and then I'll take his, and then, oh, I'm at five, and then this goes, yeah, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just really, really, really fun. The GIPF series are all super interesting like that. Zerts is another one I like that was on the short list, and that's just a bunch of, they're balls, they're actual balls. And again, you're trying to collect the most points, I think, in the different colors, like white balls, gray balls, black balls.
Pylos.
There's no blue balls. Pylo. Yeah, I've heard of that one.
Like building a pyramid.
Right. It's okay. Yeah. So anyway, Yinch is fantastic. Research the GIPF series if you've never heard of it. Jeremy's going to be doing that probably after the podcast over. They're very, very, very cool and beautiful games. That's my number five, Yinch.
Nice.
All right. Number four.
Number four.
I said that just like the Dice Tower.
Agricola, all creatures, big and small.
Oh, yeah. Some Rosenberg action going on here.
I haven't played it many times.
Yeah.
But I was very impressed, and I think it's one of the best two-player games I've played.
It's very good.
Rated 8.5.
Shut your face.
We're going up in the numbers here.
Holy cow. Oh, so, I didn't say what I rated Yinch. I think I gave Yinch an 8.
Nice.
As well. Yeah. So that, okay.
It's
so
up there.
Agricola, all creatures big and small. Why do you like that game?
I don't know. Just initially, initially my experience with Agricola was not good. The base game.
Regular Agricola, yeah.
So when you had it on the table and I walked in, I'm like, oh, no, here we go. Agricola. And I won't get into that. I know a lot of people love that game, and I just maybe had a bad experience to start with the base game. But this one is
fantastic. Hold on real quick. I think there's an equal amount of people that hate it.
Yeah, I think what I didn't like about it was I felt like I was forced to do certain things, and if I did not follow that path, then I had no choice
but to fail. That's a lot of people's problem with that. You have to do everything.
Yeah.
And if you don't do everything, so it's like there's really one strategy. You just got to get it all.
I felt it was kind of boring.
Yeah, people think that. I love the game. We won't get into that, but...
But this one is really great. It's really quick. I just love how streamlined it is, and I just love that the worker placement action and the board and how that works.
And timer.
It is just like it moves along so quickly, and you just realize, wow, like the game's almost done. I need to do something, you know, like I need to get it going. And
for sure,
I had a great time playing.
So base Agricola, you know, you're getting. Animals, and you're getting, you know, vegetables and wood, you know, all these, like, you have to do all this different stuff, right? Yeah. In all creatures big and small, it's all about the animals. All you're doing really is collecting the animals. There's no fruit, there's no harvest phase, there's no cards, there's nothing. It's just, you just got, you're building buildings, you're using fences and stuff, and then you're just putting your animals out there. And Jeremy's right, it just... And it's over. There's 8 rounds, I think. And once you're on, like, the 5th round, you're like, oh, my gosh, I've done nothing. And there's only 3 rounds left. What am I going to do? It's awesome. You don't got to worry about feeding your workers, which is something that people are so crazy about in Agricola. One, I know, detractor that people talk about. Not really even a detractor, but they kind of scratch their heads. Like, because people love Agricola as a two-player game. So they're like, wow, they made an Agricola that's only for 2 players when base Agricola works really well with just 2 players. I'll tell you what, though. I'm glad they did because I love that game, too, which you may find out later on my list. Thanks a lot, Thunder Stealer.
Yep, sorry.
That's all right. So my number 4, again, this might be the most boring pick ever. And I told Jeremy I was going to bring this over to play today, and he was like, he thought I was joking. He seriously thought I was joking. It is chess. Yep, that's right. The classic chess. I always say if I have to play on an 8x8 grid, just let it be chess, please. I played more chess when I was younger, and that's not really going to help my cool points credit. But I played so much chess when I was younger. And I mean younger, like middle school.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I played the crap out of it. Friends of mine would come over from around the block, and we would all just go in the backyard and play chess.
Really?
Yeah. I know. I don't know. That's just what we would do, and it was so much fun. And I love that game. It plays to the. It's tactical, and I love tactics. You know, like I have this little army, and I'm just gonna move this here, move that here, boom, and you're done. Then take that army, keep moving over here, and then depending on what you do, changes what I have to do right then and there. Yeah. And it's just, it's great. And it just, I don't know that I've ever been so focused on a game.
Yeah, it does take a lot of focus.
Yeah, I'm just like, and it's over, and I'm like, oh, am I still living in the world? Like, I don't even know what's going on around me. Bombs could be dropping next to me. And if I'm in a, you know.
Man, that means you're in the right place if you got to that state.
Agreed.
I wish that I would have had that experience as a younger person, because I got introduced to it after high school.
Yeah.
And I felt like at that point it's just like an intellectual like battle.
Yeah.
And I didn't fare well with that. It seemed like I just didn't grasp it, or I didn't have the focus to see 3 or 4 steps ahead.
It's weird how that works. That's a game that I think a lot of people, like, when they get into it young.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the great chess players in the world, like, started when they were 10.
Yeah.
You know, I think
it's like something about that formation of your brain and at a young age.
Yeah. So. That's weird. Huh. Yeah. I wonder if I would like it as much. I mean, I'm sure I wouldn't. But
I think I would like it more if I had, like, you know, a lot of mahogany in the room that I played it in, and, you know, a fireplace.
Yeah.
And maybe a pipe.
Are you Hugh Hefner now? Or are you Sherlock Holmes? I can't tell who you're trying to be here. Anyway, chess is fantastic. There's a bazillion different versions of it out there. Classic. You know, wooden board. I love another thing I love about it is the look of it. You can get some really cool chess boards. I've always wanted to get a chess table and just have it as a regular table, but you could just, you know, sit down and play a chess game on it whenever you want to. I would love to do that. but, I mean, it's just, you can get bogged down if you start getting into things like opening theory and, you know, stuff like that, and end game stuff like that. I just play it casually with anybody who wants to play it. And it's just as fun. Move to move. You know, move by move. I like to play it that way. I mean, certainly there's tactics I employ, but move by move thing. So that's my number 4, the most boring pick on this list, chess. Number 3.
Are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
I'm going to ruin it again.
Is chess number 3 for you? Oh, man.
Claustrophobia.
Oh! What do you mean? How do you know? What do you mean?
Well, I have a feeling.
We'll see.
Again, not many plays, but, you know.
You just know.
Seriously impressed. I know I want to return to it.
Yeah. It's like Becky.
It's like as soon as. Yeah.
When you know, you know.
Definitely. And, you know, I feel like when we played it the one time, I think I only had one play of it.
Yeah, maybe.
I wanted to play a second one immediately.
Wow,
went
all the way up to number 3. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
I mean, I think you play enough games and you can really see.
Yes, I agree.
That things are good.
I can usually tell after one play if something I'm going to enjoy or I'm not going to enjoy.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's a fast game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a dungeon crawler.
Mm-hmm.
So we got the theme,
mm-hmm.
we got the speed, and the third thing, tiles.
That's good. That's right. It does have a tile laying element. I'm not going to talk about it, though, because I just don't like it. I don't like it.
Yeah,
I love it.
Right.
So my number 3, and this won't take much time at all, this is one that, I mean, I can't remember the last time we talked about it. I think it was like 45, maybe 50 seconds ago. Agricola, all creatures big and small. You know, we talked about it a lot. It's just very, very, very cool. I've played it a bunch. The other cool thing about it is there are these tiles. There's special buildings that you put out every game, and there's 2 expansions for this. And both expansions just come with a buttload of more building tiles. So the game will never get old in that way. But that's my number 3.
One thing, again, I want to talk or just mention on the Agricola is that it's a lot of game in a tiny little box.
It is.
You know, it doesn't take much space on the shelf.
You're right. That's a good point. Okay, let's go number 2, which I think we're going to be the same on our number 2s. But go ahead, number 2.
7 Wonders Duel.
I was wrong.
This one I could play over and over and over again. I mean, it may need an expansion eventually, but I love 7 Wonders, the base game. I'll never turn it down.
Yeah.
It's just a fantastic game.
So you'd probably rate it a 10, maybe 7 Wonders, maybe.
7 Wonders Duel, 9.
Oh, man.
But it might be a little more than that. I don't know.
I mean, base 7 Wonders. Base 7 Wonders, you'd probably rate it a 10. Yeah.
Definitely. So this is just a different version of 7 Wonders. It still feels like 7 Wonders, but the mechanics are slightly different, the way the cards come out to you. The cards are small, for one thing. But I just love the mechanic of how they create the draft for the cards. It's a setup. It's how they're laid on the
like
table.
Like a pyramid.
And that setup changes per age. So you have three ages. I don't know. For those who are not familiar with Seven Wonders, it's played in three basic rounds, three ages, where you have three sets of cards that you draw through or draft through. And this one is just two players working through that setup, gathering cards and set collecting, basically, to get points. So
it's awesome. I love it. It made my short list. It was number six on my list. It's amazing. I think I like it better than Seven Wonders, than base Seven Wonders. Really? It's just so good. I like the... It completely changes how battles are.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in base Seven Wonders, you play the player on your left and the player on your right. You fight them both. And if you win, you get points. If you lose, you lose points. This one is now just a track. And one of the ways you can just win the game immediately is if you push that fight track all the way to your opponent's side. So you have to always be mindful. You don't always want to take the attack because it's not as sexy as some of the other cards. But you have to be mindful of it, or else you can just lose the game.
Yeah, I just love how they tied it into the timing of the game.
Yeah, same with the science. The science stuff in regular Seven Wonders always confounded me because I'm stupid with math. I was always like, so I get 1.7 plus squared. to the eighth. But I don't know. In this game, they're just like little circle tiles that give you cool bonus powers, and you can also there's a way to just win the game with those automatically. Yeah. But it's quick. It does not take very long. We can get through a game in 20 minutes, you and me, if we just boom, 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 boom.
And it's one you want to play over and over again.
It is one you want to play over and over again. It's very cool. It feels like Seven Wonders without all the players. It's weird how it does it. But Jeremy's right, that pyramid setup where you have some cards flipped up, some cards flipped over, and you just take one. You can burn it to get some money. And it's just really, really cool. Everything seems to fit and mold together very, very well.
Yeah.
So what did you rate that? You said maybe a niner?
I rated it a nine.
Oh, baby. Yeah. My number two. We're going back to Uwe Rosenberg here, and I'm going Patchwork.
Patchwork, yep.
So Patchwork surprised the crap out of me. I saw it on a geek list one day. It was a while ago. And somebody was just like, this game is very cool. I really like it. Okay. And then I went to RIW, this local game store in my area, and I saw it on the shelf. And I was like, well, someone just talked about it. I'll get it. And so I grabbed it, played it, and my jaw was on the floor. I was like, what?
It is really nice.
And it seems at first you play it, and it doesn't seem like much. It's like, oh, this is little, you know, you're just taking some tiles, putting them on your board,
just
making
quilts.
A quilt. Yeah. But the game opens up to you after a few plays. Yeah. And I think you'll see that if we play it more. There's a lot of tough decisions to make and strategies that kind of open up, and there's different cool things you can do. So basically, we each have a quilt board, and you're making a quilt. And there's a bunch of like Tetris-style pieces all around the main board, and you basically are taking those, buying them, and the currency is buttons. How adorable is that? You're taking them and putting them on your board, trying to cover up the most space on your board. That's basically what you want to do, because at the end of the game, however many buttons you have, less 2 points for each uncovered square that you leave is your final score. So you really need to cover it all up. And it's just another one that just like it hums. It fits together. You play it and you're like, how did I not design this? You know, like it's one of those kinds of games where you're just like, this is genius.
It is brilliant. I didn't fare well on the first game that I played.
Nobody does. That's not you. The first time I played it, I was in the negative.
But it didn't matter.
The first few times I was in the negative.
Yeah, I felt like it didn't matter because I enjoyed it anyway.
It's great.
It's a great game.
It's great. Check it out if you like the quilting theme. I know a lot of people, it goes well. My wife will play it with me. You know, she enjoys that theme. It's very colorful. There's an app out now. You can try it on the iOS or Android. I'm not sure if it's on Windows, but you can try it now. It just came out. And it's just a really cool game.
Yeah.
Patchwork. And here we are, number one. This is not going to be too much of a surprise to either of us, but maybe you guys don't know. Jeremy's number one.
Can you guess?
Did we play it today?
Yeah.
Stop the germs, really?
No. Oh, yeah, you know. No, actually, it's Summoner Wars. Just by far my favorite. We've already gone over it, but It's a fantastic game.
This is one thing that you and me might both have the same thing on. Is this your favorite game, period?
No.
Never mind. I take that back.
It's what? Well, it's my favorite two-player, obviously. In my top five of everything.
Yeah.
You know, there's other games that, like, Seven Wonders is one of those.
You've played this more than any other game, I'm guessing.
Yes. Yeah.
What is it that you just love about it the most? Awesome. Very well said.
Darn.
Just kidding.
I don't know. I think it's just the theme. It's the cards. It, you know, I can sort of customize it, and so I get that feel of the old school Magic cards, you know? And
yeah.
It's just really cool.
It just clicks. Something just clicks with you about it.
Yeah, it's just fun.
You get it.
I get that.
Is a big thing with me. If I just, for some reason, the game just clicks and I get it, that I just, bloop, I love it. It's way up the list. Yeah. Hansa Teutonica is like that with me. I just get it, and that helps me with it. Yeah. And sometimes I'm like, I can't really put my finger on exactly why I like it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just seems like that. It's got everything that you like in games.
Yeah.
Right?
Nice art.
Yeah, the art is fantastic. The
production is great.
It is.
Just well done all around.
Very good. Number one for you, is that a 10?
Yes.
My number one. It's Claustrophobia. I mean, okay. I could go on and on and on about Claustrophobia. The things I like about it. It's ridiculously tense. Every single game of Claustrophobia that I've played has come down to the very, very end, like the very, very last turn where you don't know who's going to win. And then all of a sudden, you know, some big swing of fate happens and, oh, I win or you win. And it's so engaging. There's rarely have I played this game where you knew who was going to win halfway through and you were just kind of like, ugh, and frustrated. It normally always comes down to the end. And the end is only 45 minutes from the beginning. It's really short. And it's a huge, like, you know, you look at the box and it's like this big coffin box, you know, and then there's all these like painted miniatures, which are gorgeous, and the tiles, which are gorgeous.
Yeah.
But it's huge. It takes a lot of table space. And so you assume when you look at it, okay, this is going to be some huge thing that's going to take, you know, 3 hours, and I'm not going to understand what I'm doing, but that's not true. It's very, very, very quick, but it's not quick at the detriment of gameplay. There is so many decisions to make on both sides, and the best thing about it in that way is the game is asymmetric. You know, I'm the heroes, you're the demons. We're completely different in the way we play. Completely. I have health that I have to manage, and that kind of dictates what I can do. Jeremy has dice that he can use. They're the demon, so he can put them on his demon board to attack me in different ways. He's throwing waves and waves of troglodytes at me, and I can pick them off pretty easily, but they just keep coming and coming and coming. I only have four guys, you know, and he whittles me down, and can he whittle me down and kill me before I can make it to the end? And it's like, it's so awesome in that way. That is like the best thing about it. And there's all these different scenarios and they tell a story. And so you're kind of getting that, you know, thematic like evocation. And it's like, this is so cool. And you're just really excited when you play it. It's very, very exciting. And there's two expansions for it, and they add, you know, cool monsters. And one of the best things about it is I can teach it in 15, not even 15 minutes. The rule set is so minimal. There's like, it's simple. And those are the best kinds of games, I think, that you don't have to, there's not 10 exceptions to these rules.
Yeah.
It's this, 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 and this. And then the cards can break it a little bit. But it's very simple.
Yeah.
Very simple. It's by far my favorite two-player game. And it's my favorite. It was number one on my top 20 this year. It's my favorite game.
Ever?
I think so. I mean, it's hard to say that. It changes between, you know, Cosmic Encounter or The Resistance, or I really like Terra Mystica lately, but I'm pretty confident that I can say that Claustrophobia is my favorite game. Certainly my favorite two-player game. Croc really has a hit there. It's fantastic.
I think that if I was introduced to Claustrophobia at the same time I was introduced to Summoner Wars, it would be probably
50-50.
A hard choice to make it number one.
We're going to play it more, and I think you're going to just fall in love.
I think it'll move up the list for sure.
Yeah, it's so, I mean, it's pretty high still. It's three on yours right now, so
yeah.
I think it might move up your top forever, whatever, of any kind of player. So. It's that good. So please go check out both Claustrophobia and Summoner Wars, and all the games on the top five if you like that. But that is our top five games. Our first list that we have done. This has been episode 5.
Episode 5.
Thank you for listening. For Jeremy Pete, I am Ryan James. This has been the Gamecasters.
Yep. Thanks for stopping by.
You guys are the best. See ya. Talking at the same time.